Welcome to a new episode of Delicate Wrinkles. Today I plan on doing things a little bit differently. Thought I would just do a little experimentation. Maybe I'm inspired by the new cleanliness of my office, which is now my wife and I's office, because she got news that I think she's going to be working from home, so that's pretty cool. Set it up, got my desk, her desk. I mean, she tore this place apart and cleaned it, and it looks absolutely amazing. I've been in here the past like 30 or 45 minutes just kind of working on tonight's episode. Did some praying and thinking, meditating, some breathing exercises, just trying to clear my head, clear my emotions. And it's a lot easier to do it in here. It smells nicer, looks nicer, cleaner. It's just a more conducive work environment. So I appreciate it. Thank you, wife. It's a wonderful thing that was done today. Last week, there was a couple things I mentioned. I was looking forward to beginning the late shift at work. Sadly, that's been delayed, which means I have to call dental office and behavioralist and Tahlequah and reschedule some appointments, because I had scheduled them this week thinking, you know, oh, I'll start the late shift so 8 a.m. is free. Well, not the case. So maybe next week or the week after, we'll see. I'm sure the people currently on the late shift are rather frustrated that they have to wait a little bit longer, because the late shift always goes to us newbies, and the people who were the newbies before are always looking forward to when they finally have some seniority over somebody. I'm sure I might be feeling the same here in a month or two. I mentioned the possibility of having difficulty gaining medicine. Monday, today, was the day I was going to run out and have none left. But it was submitted Friday afternoon. I went and made sure it was, and everything worked out well. So that's good. Don't have to think about it till next month. However, as I mentioned last week, more about properly, you know, prepping our minds for potential experiences in the future, or things we know are probably going to come, or situation, or people we maybe respond irrationally to or overly emotional. How it's good to do some mental exercises, mental practices, you know, spiritual practices and exercises to prepare ourselves for a better response. Now, what's crazy is I took my own advice. Yes, that's crazy, right? Because it's one of those things we're not too good at taking our own advice. But I took it, and a whole week I wasn't ignoring the Friday, you know, having to face whether my doctor had written the prescription or not, or signed off on it, to be more exact. Because before, I would just kind of ignore it, I guess. Not intentionally, but I've gotten pretty good at just putting stuff to the back of my mind and not think about it, because I always had the problem of obsessing about it, as I mentioned last week, until it was completed. So I'll kind of catch 22 there. But I didn't ignore it. I prepped my mind. And not like how I would respond emotionally or negatively or in frustration or righteous indignation if it wasn't ready. No, I was prepping my mind for the possibility of not only being told it wasn't going to be ready Friday or before Monday or Tuesday, but preparing my mind for perhaps having to go without it and just getting my mind to accept it as a possibility. Getting my mind to accept that if it occurred, it wouldn't be the end of the world. It wouldn't have any bearing on me as a person. It wouldn't mean that I was insignificant or that life was going to crumble. Preparing my mind, getting my mind to understand that, yes, I've been through situations like this before. They sucked, but I was able to overcome it. And I just... I intentionally made myself think of that. I didn't just wait until the worry or anxiousness or wonder of whether the medicine would be ready. I didn't wait until those thoughts came. I had to force myself, not had to, but I intentionally brought it up, intentionally thought about it, so I would have to face it. And it worked. You know, Friday came and I was relaxed. I wasn't worrying. Like, I did bring it up to my wife a couple times, but not in the same sense as I had all the times before. I didn't have that panic feel. I don't know if she noticed a difference in my bringing it up. Maybe she did, maybe she didn't. Doesn't really matter. What matters is how I was catching myself mentally. And it all worked out. It's good. And so, you know, I felt like I experienced a small victory, small mental victory, you know, with being overcome. You know, I mean, it became a monthly situation. Whereas, like, I had a freak out at the end of every month, or not the end of every month, around the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, or 10th, sometime around that every month. And it's like, man, I don't want to experience that. And got my refill on my other meds, and it was prescribed with 11 more refills, so don't have to, like, really... be too concerned about that. Does that mean I not think about it or prep my mind in any way? Nah. But it is good to know that I've got refills set up for a while. But that's this episode. I really wanted to focus on, like, the strategies, the mental strategies, like ideas, importance of it. I think we already know it's important, but applications, I guess. You know, last week talked about the importance of it, talked about why, you know, the idea of it, the theory of it. Now I wanted to talk about how do we make it applicable? Why do we make it applicable? You know, how do we apply it? And it's difficult because, one, our mind is, you know, usually resistant to doing new things. Applying this in your life means actually, like, taking time out of the day to not, you know, look at your phone, to put aside all electronic devices, to get away from activities or people, just kind of be in a quiet spot with your thoughts and confront your thoughts and emotions. Like, and that... if you're not used to it, that can be intimidating. It can be scary almost. But it's very good for your mind. And this is why, like, honestly, this is why prayer is something that is very good and healthy for a lot of people, like, because of how it benefits you psychologically. Prayer seems to be very good. I don't want to get into any type of religious debate. Honestly, I mean, prayer's a part of so many religions. But when you get in that meditative mental state and relax your mind, like, gain control of your emotions and really, you know, kind of balance out your emotions, balance out your mind, your reason, get them to balance and work together, able to come up, like, think more clearly, respond better, react better, just stress and anxiety seem to leave. You know, I've been, as I've mentioned before, partaking in a lot of breathing exercises. And the more you do it, the more, or the easier it becomes to, like, slip into it. When there's a moment of distress or panic or anxiety or frustration, just kind of closing my eyes for a moment, taking in some deep breaths, you know, pushing a bit near my sternum with my hands. And I feel, you know, now it's pretty quick, the onset of peace that comes to my mind. Or, you know, getting a hold of my emotions. That's the key, getting a hold of our emotions. Not letting our emotions overwhelm us and dictate how we respond, react, how we maybe shout at someone or argue with somebody, or criticize, or ourselves. And so I wanted to go as much in depth as possible. But I think the first thing is some, you know, what I've read a lot about in books and from a therapist is, like, first step is, like, create a plan of action, you know, creating your plan of action, that's the very first step. Like, you know, I sit down with a journal typically and will write down. You may want to sit down with someone close to you and discuss it. Have them write it down if you're not really good at putting your thoughts down on paper. Maybe record yourself talking. But creating a plan of action is very important, very beneficial. By creating a plan of action, maybe, like, okay, you know, and you want to do it small steps. You don't want to overwhelm yourself. I mean, we're already dealing with a mental disorder, overwhelming of emotions. You know, so maybe a plan of action of one thing, like, okay, I want to, you know, better respond to, you know, maybe work deadlines, or, you know, how do I deal with the anxiety I feel at work? How do I deal with the anxiety when I get home from work, you know, or when it comes to paying bills, whatever it may be, or when I'm around a certain person, whatever it is that seems to, like, really drive your emotions. You create a plan of action. Getting a book to help. Book I'm reading that I would highly suggest. I mean, it's not the best book in the world. As I've said to friends and stuff, like, I don't know, psychologists and writing skills, like, I don't know. It's just, I guess maybe I'm being too judgmental or critical, being major in English. But it's the Dialectal Behavior Therapy Skills Workbook by Matthew McKay, PhD, Jeffrey C. Wood, psychiatrist, and Jeffrey Brantley, MD. Very good workbook, very beneficial. There's some things in it that seem kind of cheesy, or it's like, oh, kind of wish they had phrased that differently. But I think I'm just being a little overly critical when I don't need to be, because for the most part, what I've read in it, there's like worksheets in it, checklists, a lot of, like, it's very interactive, which is good, which is what you need. Like, when you get your mind working on something, that's a really good way of helping you curb your emotions and getting a handle on it. And so creating a plan of action, getting a book like this, or, you know, like, okay, let's maybe step and see what drives our emotions, you know. And it's always good to have, like, someone you can really trust, or, you know, or a therapist, someone you can talk to at least once a week or once every 2 weeks about what you're going through, and, you know, someone you can just kind of talk to and vent to, and who will listen and truly care and not try to fix you. And that's the key, is, like, being able to talk to someone who's not going to try and tell you to just get over it or tell you how to fix it, because that's, You know, obviously, if we're dealing with the mental disorder, overwhelming emotions, it's not going to be an easy fix, you know. And when I say that, it means it's probably going to take years. You know, you got to be just ready to be in it for the long haul, you know. It took, like, for my mind to become the way it has become, it's taken 35 years. To change the negative behavior aspects of that, it's going to take more than, like, a harsh word or someone being like, dude, you need to knock it off, you know, something like that. It takes time, it takes patience, and so that's why it's good, though, to kind of surround yourself with people not who condone negative behavior or who disagree with you, but to be surrounded by people who care, who don't try to fix you or make you just get over something, but are there with you, you know, who will call you on your bullshit, but also be there to hug you when you screw up or you're in emotional distress. You know, someone you could call at 2 in the morning and they'd be there for you. You know, a counselor of mine said, your 2 a.m. friend. You know, and it's like, yeah, we don't have a lot of those. But, I mean, I know I have at least one, you know. One friend who did come over around 12:30, midnight, 1 in the morning when I was going through a breakdown back in the summer. But it's good to have one of those. I mean, I wouldn't suggest dwelling on it because I know before that moment I used to dwell on it thinking I didn't have anybody like that and it depressed me even more. So I wouldn't, like, don't think about it in when you're already emotionally spent or going through emotional crisis, especially if part of that is thinking you don't have many friends. Because we're not able to think rationally. Most likely we do have a good friend or two, but when we let our emotions overwhelm us, we can't think clearly enough. So find a good, like, friend, accountability partner, therapist, somebody that we can talk to. Now, like, the first step, you know, I'm going to kind of summarize parts of the book, and I mean, because it really did help me a lot, like, the first steps, and it's something I want to go over again and try and do more of a daily practice with, because it is important. I've already seen some improvement, and I'm thinking, man, how much more improvement can there be? Obviously more. I haven't been putting as much into it as I'd like. I keep doing the breathing exercises, but I'm like, if I, you know, like, before I started working, I'd spend 30 to 45 minutes outside on the deck with a cup of green tea and just really get into these mental exercises, and it just helps so well. Like, it was just amazing. And I want to get back into that 30, 45 minute routine, because it became like this prayer meditative state, but where it's like strengthening my mind, you know, to better cope with overwhelming emotions. So it opens up, and I like this, it opens up with kind of negative, because we start off in this negative, like, we're starting off basically in a negative state, you know, overwhelming emotions. We don't want to start off with, like, positivity almost. I don't know, I thought it's good. Starts off with 12 coping strategies that actually make problems worse. The 12 common ways we as people try to deal with stuff, and it actually just makes the situation worse. And, man, when I first read this and reading it again, I was like, oh my gosh, like, I've done more than half of these. And, yeah, I could see how for years, decades, actually, gosh, I'm able to say decades now, how it just made the situation work. It perpetuated, went on much longer than it needed to. It was the first one, you know. first coping strategy we usually do that makes the problem worse, I think this one's pretty universal, is dwelling on our past mistakes. Like, going so far as to just constantly, like, criticize ourselves or keep, like, oh, if I hadn't done this or if they hadn't have done that. Like, just where we constantly focus on our past pains or past problems. You know, like, I can't believe that person, she did that to me or he said that to me, and it was years ago. And that doesn't mean disregard abuse people have thrown on you. But it means, like, you know, when we try to cope by just dwelling on it, it doesn't really make it better. It makes the situation worse. Like, I just find it interesting, you know, because I've done that, you know, I've dwelled on pains people have caused me. And then what it actually ended up doing was, when I'd be around them, I would overcompensate, not like be critical to them or mean. I'd try to get their approval. I'd overcompensate and, you know, just worry about getting their approval, because they wouldn't cause me pain if they approved of me. That was my mindset. But because I was so focused on the pain, and not focus on, like, why maybe the pain occurred, or think rationally about it, my response was negative. It just perpetuated it, made the problem worse. You know, with mistakes I made, like when I gambled back in the day, and debt was bad, I would just focus on the mistake I was making gambling, the bad choices, the bad decision, the pain it was causing, and the debt it was increasing. I would get hopeless and think, well, I gotta make up for it. And then I'd gamble more, trying to win back that money I'd lost, but I just created this perpetual cycle until the debt got, like, out of hand. And I was just focusing on past mistakes, problems. Number two, I've done this one a ton, and I know some of my friends do too, where you develop, like, intense anxiety or worry. It doesn't even have to be intense. It could be in the back of our head and then just explode later. But, you know, anxiety or worry over potential future pains, mistakes, or problems. Like, you know, I've worried and had anxiety over future bills, or maybe future job opportunities. But I mean, we all do it. You know, think about hypothetical situations in the future of how someone may hurt us, or how someone said something to us, how we could respond to them to hurt them back, or, you know. But we get anxiety over it. Anxiety over going to visit some people who have hurt us in the past, or, you know, and so we dwell on the potential hurt that could occur later. And we dwell on that. We're not coping. So it's like, that's when one of those times where it's like the self-fulfilling prophecy is going to occur. And it doesn't help our mind. It doesn't help the health of our mind. All we're doing is increasing anxiety and worry and depression and feeling of hopelessness. And it's a continuation of, you know, giving strength to our emotions and taking away strength from the rational part of our mind, being able to reason and step out of the situation to think about it clearly. Third one. I've done this one. Friends have. I think it's easy to do number three in our culture. Isolation. Isolation. Too much isolation, especially, is going to breed insanity. I've seen it myself. I've seen it in friends. Whatever mental disorder we have, if you have a mental disorder, increased isolation is going to increase, you know, like with me, it would increase my compulsions. It's going to increase what I obsess over, what I the compulsions to try and combat that obsessiveness. You know, I mentioned before a guy I knew and went to school with how his has increased. The more isolated you become, the more his OCD symptoms increase. I have friends tell me how their anxiety increases the more isolated they become, you know. And that's why it's important to make ourselves get out. And not just make ourselves, that's why it's important to have that good friend and to be aware of it happening not only in ourselves but with friends we know, family members we know. Getting a person out of the house, getting them away from isolation. And they'll be resistant. But we need to be like, get them out lovingly. Not criticize them. Not try to guilt them to get out. But to be there for them. And if they don't want to get out, then we'll stay in the house with them. You know? But the key is to not let them be alone. Even if we're sitting there in silence, you know, or, you know, just bullshitting around, it's important to not let ourselves be alone. You know, that's what's important. That's the key, you know. Because too much isolation is just a bad, bad thing. Number four, not too much problem with this, alcohol and drugs, but it is common. You know, having a mental disorder is a great, like, segue into addiction. Especially if you don't know you have a mental disorder or you feel like you can't control your emotions. Things like alcohol, drugs, smoking, prescription meds, people overtake, you know, or take that aren't prescribed to them. So many things, you know, and it's a coping mechanism we'll use, like, maybe to dampen our anger or frustration or maybe, you know, it's kind of like cliche, like you're angry or you're stressed, so you're going to smoke more cigarettes, or you're pissed at someone or you're down, so you're going to drink, you know, you're wound tight, so you're going to smoke some pot or... And then there's people I've known who've done some coke and crack or meth, and it's like, oh, these don't solve the problem, of course. They're actually going to make it worse later, you know, because all these things, all we're doing is like kind of masking. We're trying to find something to kind of like, I guess, temporarily stop that pain or temporarily put a hold on the emotions. But then, you know, we're not teaching ourselves how to handle them. Number five, I've done number five pretty bad. Take it out on others. You know, it's like, oh, he's just in a bad mood. You know, it's not always a bad mood. Like, I know when I was really going through my depression, not able to accept who I was as a person, just overly critical of myself and feeling like I couldn't do anything right, and then just dwelling on it, you know, like, number one, dwelling on it, and then number two, anxiety over continually doing it, I would become destructive. Like, I would get into fights with my wife, we'd yell at each other, she'd get upset, she'd cry, I was, you know, just... It's like I cut at her soul, you know? And I just, in anger and frustration, would break things, break plates, broke a vacuum. I just, you know, I would just slam stuff into the floor, like my phone. It's just, I was destructive. And I'd break things I liked because it's like, it felt like I needed to hurt myself. You know, and that leads to number six, dangerous behaviors. You know, partaking in behaviors that are dangerous, almost like we don't want to come out of it. It's like maybe to thrill, or maybe, you know, maybe we'll accidentally get hurt, like screwing around on the train tracks. Maybe we'll slip and that train will hit us, or maybe, you know, will fall on that Carl had a son. Like, but just dangerous activities, it's like, well, if we don't make it out, that's okay. You know, it's like, I'm not killing myself, but I'm putting myself in these situations where I could die. And I was like, oh my gosh, but, you know, we do that. Seven I've never done, but I've known of people who have unsafe sexual activities. You know, sometimes we get so emotionally weighed down, feeling the need, feel like we're loved or cared for, and, you know, sex is big about that. That's what sex is about, you know, connection, coming one with somebody, and when you're going through emotional discord, sometimes, and you don't know how to properly handle it, that's a route some people take, and some people partake in very unsafe sexual activities. I mean, there's a reason so many STDs around, you know. There's plenty of smart people out there who are like, you know, I don't want to get these diseases, so I'm not going to just bang every person I meet or, you know, take all these risks. But eight, I've done this one, avoidance of problems, avoiding the problem. Avoid it, avoid it, avoid it. Let's not talk about it. Just drop it. Forget about it. I don't want to talk about it. You know, like, just let's watch some TV. Let's forget about it. Let's get on the internet. Let's forget about it. Like, we have so many toys. Avoidance is so easy. Avoiding our problems. That just perpetuates them. I avoided my problems when I had my gambling addiction. I had bills to pay. And instead of calling places and trying setting up cheap payment plans or, you know, getting extensions, I avoid the problem. I didn't call them. I just let it rack up. Our gas got shut off when we lived in Tulsa. Had to boil water and put in the bathtub. You know, I'm really surprised my wife didn't leave me. Like, it was bad. But I avoided the problem. I avoided it. I avoided that I had a problem gambling. For so long I avoided I had a problem smoking. You know? I mean, I can't imagine the damage I've already done to my body. I'm glad I stopped in June. You know? But there still could be some damage on my lungs and in my body that could be irreparable. Not going to worry about it or dwell on it, but I do accept it's a possibility. You know, because I avoided the problem of smoking for nearly 20 years. You know, I started regularly smoking at 16. And yeah, I stopped for a year here, a year and a half or two there, but only smoked a lot more of those 19 years than I did not smoke. But I avoided the problem. Avoided the problem I had with when I had issues with pornography. Because the problem wasn't that I was just a dude who liked to get my jollies off. The problem was I idolized sex. I saw sex in a way it wanted me to be seen. I idolized smoking, and, you know, if we look at a lot of our problems, it's that we're idolizing something. You know, maybe we're idolizing comfort. Or maybe we're idolizing success. But we idolize things. Now when we avoid accepting that, avoiding the problem, it just perpetuates and gets worse. Number nine. Never had a problem with this, but I've known people who have. Eating disorders. I knew people, I've known a few, actually at least three come to mind. had problems with bulimia at some point. It's crazy too, because it's like they didn't need to do that, but it's obviously more than about weight, you know, more than about, it's how they cope with things, cope with emotions, cope with overwhelming emotions, overwhelming, like, or mental disorders, you know, like, but it happens. But yeah, I knew people who would throw up after they ate. Went to high school with a girl, you know, someone who's anorexic. But yeah, I mean, known someone who kind of ate for comfort, ate their feelings. I've known more than one. But it happens, we do that. You know, we avoid our problems. We don't face it, or, you know, maybe because we don't know how to, or we don't want to. And, you know, eating disorder is one of the negative ways we use to cope. Ten's intense. 10 suicide attempts. I had suicidal thoughts, you know, back over the summer. Never attempted, but as I mentioned in an earlier podcast, what scared me into wanting to go to the hospital is I started making plans. When you start making plans for suicide, when you start picturing how you could do it, that's when you're getting close to a point of no return. And that's when you really need to talk to somebody. You know, it's important, you know. That's when you need to get out of isolation, and it's hard though too. It's when you've delved so deep into that, it's hard to get our mind to turn back. And that's why it's good at any point right now to have a good friend and to be a good friend, you know. And then number 11, avoidance of pleasant activities. What do I mean by avoidance of pleasant activities? Maybe you're someone who likes to go out and skateboard, but you don't anymore. Someone who likes to go shoot hoops. Someone who likes to go for walks, bike ride, runs. Maybe you enjoy going to the mall, you know, skating. Who knows? Activities you normally do. Maybe you like going to work out. But then you just stop. You know, almost as if, like, to punish yourself. I know I used to do that. I used to, like, punish myself and not partake in pleasant activities because I felt like it wasn't deserving. Then number 12, surrender to emotional pain, where we give up, resign to a miserable life as if it's our fate. I used to think, like, that I was meant to always come up short. That was my lot in life. To come up short. To always be so close to the prize and just miss it. And so, I would get so distraught. So overwhelmed with negative emotions. Like, at the dumbest things. When I gambled. If I saw other people winning and I lost. It's that sense of loss. Playing Magic the Gathering, that tournament stuff got so close. If I lost, I was like, that's my lot. The emotions would overwhelm me. I felt low. You know, or if I didn't get enough sales on a novel I wrote, or a major publisher to buy it. That's hard as hell to do. I mean, that's hard. Not everybody can do that. But when you focus on your losses and never on your wins, you know, and that's what I was doing. And so I would just surrender to that emotional pain and just basically give up. Think, well, this is how my life's supposed to be. Well, that's how it's going to be if that's how I'm thinking it is. But that was just the emotions. Overwhelming me, plaguing me, driving me mad. I know there's a ton of you out there who it does the same thing to. Like, you get stuck in that anger towards someone, or frustration with someone. You know, that stubbornness where it's like you're moody and you just refuse to have fun, refuse to let it go because some reason that would make them win. And it's like, make who win what? You know, it's learning how to recognize when it occurs, when one of these 12 coping mechanisms occur, because we're always going to experience some sort of emotional distress, some sort of physical, emotional, mental distress, whether we have a mental disorder or not. Those of us with mental disorders, we're going to experience it more frequently, and it's going to be a little bit more difficult to create healthier coping strategies. But whether we have a mental disorder or not, if we don't come up with a good coping strategy plan, then eventually we're just going to be a slave to our emotions. And it's just how we respond is going to be on a whim, you know, with how we are that day. And I'm sorry, I guess over the years I've just gotten tired. Oh, they're just in a bad mood. Because sometimes it's like, no, that's bullshit. Like, I don't care if they're in a bad mood. You don't talk to a kid that way. Or you don't respond to your spouse that way. And does that mean you criticize the person? No. It means if we're able to understand and take that step to come up with better coping strategies, let's do it. You know, yes, let's show compassion and mercy. Let's help each other come up with good coping strategies. And so, you know, there's the negative. You know, like I said, it's good to start off on the negative because we all do that. We've all done it, currently do it. You know, there's some that are more rare. Doesn't make you worse. Doesn't make the other person better. You know, some people may think, oh, you know, having a eating disorder is worse. No. I mean, to me, they're all bad ways of coping. All 12 of them. I don't think one, I'm not going to say one worse than the other. Because who am I to criticize or judge that? You know, I've done shitty things with my coping mechanisms. We all have. So we can't say like, well, at least I don't do this or that. That's not the point. Comparison, that doesn't help anybody. We have to see what we do and how those coping mechanisms affect us. And that's where you go next. Like, so what you do is you figure out which one of those you do. You know, eight of the 12, I think. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 8 or 9, yeah. So I was like, all right, that's a lot. That's a lot of bad ways I would try to cope, and those aren't gonna help. Those aren't gonna heal your mind or emotions. So we gotta think to ourselves, all right, how do we normally cope? Well, what's my normal go-to response? You know, is it to go throw up? Is it to binge eat? Is it to starve myself? Is it to take some drugs? Smoke a bunch of cigarettes? Is it to hurt myself? Cut myself? Is it to, like, gripe out someone I care about? You know, is it to post a bunch of nasty things about people I normally wouldn't say that about on, like, things like Facebook or Twitter? I mean, what is it? Do I sit in my room and stew over the past? Do I sit in my room and worry over the future? Do I ignore everybody I know for, you know, days to weeks to months at a time? Just go to work, go home, watch TV, go to work, go home, play video games, go to work, go home, just sit in the dark? Do I isolate myself? You know, like, what do I do? How do I cope when things get out of hand? And what is it that leads me to these coping strategies? What are my triggers? What are the things that lead me to use these coping strategies? You know, how do we cope? Why do we cope in this way? What's the reason? And then the biggest part, the end of it, the exercise. And I really enjoyed doing it when I did it. What are the results? What are the results, the cost of these negative coping strategies? What do we see as the results? Because it bears some sort of fruit or lack of. There's always a cost. Something is going to come out of it. Whether it's a negative coping strategy or a positive, something's going to come out of it. And in understanding the negative ways we cope, to really understand it, to really break ourselves away from it, we have to see the results, the cost, the loss of that these strategies have caused. And so what the book has set up for a worksheet that I thought was really good was you have one side, a distressing situation, a common distressing situation you experience, an emotional distressing occurrence, and then the coping thought you'd normally use, and then a new coping thought you could use, a healthy coping thought you could use. I thought that was just really good. I broke it down, went over it, prayed about it, thought about it, did some breathing exercises because I realized, all right, because I was getting anxious about doing the worksheet and like, am I going to do it right? It's like, man, I ain't getting a grade on this. Just be completely honest. Spend time because it's not something you can just fly through. You got to really munch on it, eat it, you know, absorb it, just embrace it, and spend time on it. Because this is our mind, this is our emotions, our spirit, our soul, our very life. I mean, we can continue in the same cycle. But I know if you're like me, so you're struggling from some sort of mental disorder, you don't want to just rely on pills, because eventually pills lose their oomph, their kick, what they're made for, because they weren't made as an end-all. They're made to get your mind into a place to where you can start working on how to better deal with your emotions. Because what happened is your disorder basically got so out of hand, or got to a point where your emotions got out of hand, you didn't know how to properly deal with it. And that's how it happened with me. And so I just wanted to kind of share how I did mine. Like, one distressing situation I have is, you know, when I get nervous in awkward situations, like if I was going to a party of some kind of gathering and I'd feel awkward, or, you know, so I get nervous. And when I get nervous, I pace. Especially when I don't have anything to keep me busy. You know, if other conversations are going on, I have nothing to keep myself busy, nothing to do with my hands, no one to talk to or discuss things with, I start to pace. Back when I smoked, I would pace outside and smoke quite a bit. And so, you know, it was very negative coping, you know. Then I started thinking, okay, new coping thought was getting my mind to a point where it's like, all right, instead of getting nervous and pace, or instead of looking at this as like a boring or awkward moment or smoking, like calming my mind and just listening to the people around me, make it to where it's not about me, but just the people around me. Get myself in this mindset of where I'm an observer. I'm just listening. You know, listening to the people around me, listening, you know, for, you know, me being Christian, listening to God, like, you know, how, in what way does he want me to look at these people? With love, of course, and, you know, see their pain. How can I help them with that? You know, really try to open my eyes to really see all these people for who they really are. And then I've done that, and so I found myself pacing less, being less nervous, feeling less awkward, feeling less like I have to do all the talking. I think I'll skip number two. Overwhelmed with guilt for like playing Magic the Gathering too much. And that was, you know, kind of a coping strategy number one, negative coping strategy number one, dwelling on past pains, problems, and mistakes. So I would overwhelm myself with guilt, just focus on that. That's all I do, is focus on that guilt. I didn't lead to anything. It certainly didn't change my behavior. So I wrote down, I obsess, and that's okay, because I'm learning to cope, and that I'll learn better skills. So I realized that if I do it, like, not get mad at myself for doing it, but, like, try and be like, okay, did I catch myself obsessing over it? And when I caught myself, did I stop, you know, and figuring out coping ways to, like, I guess, come in and put a pause on my obsession, on my OCD. And that's helped. Like, I just notice a lot when you don't just give in to the emotional response, because that's the quick, easy response. But, like, take a step back, stop, prayerfully consider it. Usually come up with a much better answer, much better solution. One was become anxious before prayer or reading the Bible. For a while I get anxious at doing something wrong or confronting God. I realized I had a lot of that it was due to unrealistic expectations I had for myself. Because I felt like if I didn't, I guess, produce certain quality of work or achieve certain success, that I wasn't being a very good person, human being. So who was I to pray to God? But then I realized, man, I'm just putting a lot of unrealistic expectations on myself, unrealistic expectations of what to get out of prayer. And so after that, it became much more relaxing. No unrealistic expectations, no real expectations at all. And, I mean, at times I still get anxious, but nowhere near like I did before. Worrying I would never fulfill my goals and dreams. That led to so much stuff. Isolation, anxiety, taking things out on others, dangerous behaviors, avoidance of problems, avoidance of pleasant activities, like, all just... So, but I've been, like, kind of more, no more unrealistic expectations. Understanding takes time and patience. I feel like God's given me certain skills and vision. I just need to take time, you know, spend free time I have to master the craft and, you know, write more stories. When it happens, it happens, but to not be worried about it. Used to have a hard time before I got this new job, thinking about how much I hated my job, you know, when I taught or when I worked at DHS. Like, I had just gotten this pattern where I thought, like, focused only on the negative aspects of job and let it really distress me and depress me. And so then I thought, okay, you know, instead of thinking about that, I'm going to think, okay, you know, one, there's not a whole lot I can do about it right now. That's okay. You know, I can take small steps to something better in the future. However, I need to just remind myself and understand, you know, that this job's only for a time. It's only a job. Job doesn't define who I am. You know, undefined, my spirit inside me, my soul, you know. God defines me. You know, my job doesn't. So I don't need to put so much importance on it. And once I did that, a lot of weight came off my shoulders. A lot of weight. Because I shouldn't feel like a lot's expected of me. You know, where did these unrealistic expectations come from? Why did I put them on my shoulders? You know, I used to think a lot of distressing situation would, if I fail, you know, as an artist, minister, if I fail as dad, as a husband, something terrible will happen. Like, if I don't achieve these goals or dreams, like, something bad's gonna happen. And of course, that's the OCD. I realize that now, like, a lot of that has to do with the obsessive compulsive disorder. And so now my new coping thought is the world, God, angels do not rely or rest their worries on me. You know, God never gave me this task. Like, the weight of the world wasn't placed on my shoulders. God didn't ask me to take on all this stuff. So I need to relax. Because something terrible's not going to happen if I fail. All of us fail all the time. The more we fail, the closer we're going to get to success. Because if we fail right, trial and error, the next time, we're not going to do the things that caused us to fail time before. So each time we fail, we're going to improve, you know. I heard a quote once that to be successful, you have to increase your pursuit of failure. No, increase your rate of failure. Increase your rate of failure. Because that means you're taking chances, you're taking risks, you're continually experimenting, seeing what works, seeing what didn't. I really like that. And it's like, okay, well, if we're increasing how much we fail, then things don't have to be perfect every time. It means I can relax and just enjoy the progress. Okay. But you have to get past your emotions to get to those thoughts. And when you continually think, like, you know, think with create more new coping thoughts to replace the negative ones, you're going to get to where that becomes your first response. It becomes second nature. The negative ones are firsthand, second nature, because it's what you've done for years. And bad habits take a while to die. I used to have trouble with obsessing, you know, and of course that's a given. Obsess over, could be a story, could be an image I saw. It doesn't matter. But now, instead of trying to make myself not think about it, I think about other things. You know, I take some breaths, and I put my focus on something else. And of course, it takes time to be able to get there, because you have to train your mind. And that's what it's all about. That's why I brought up what I brought about last week, and brought up this week, because, you know, why I enjoy talking about the disorders and talking with other people, which I plan to continue to do more of. The end game, the main reason for all of it, is to get us thinking differently. So when we start thinking differently, we start acting differently, arguing less and helping more, you know. Being less critical, more productive. Less judgmental, more compassionate and merciful. And not only to other people, but to ourselves as well. My wife has always said, I'm super hard on myself. And she used to ask me a lot, did I even love myself? She'd say, you don't like yourself very much. Do you even love yourself? And she was right. You know, of course, at the times when she'd bring it up, in my distress, I would always go toward that, to a negative coping a negative coping reaction, you know. And it didn't make anything better. We'd usually get in an argument. But this book, it has some really good advice. If you have a chance to buy it, I highly suggest it. Your therapist might be able to help you work through it. I know my therapist is one who got me onto the book. I'm very thankful for it, because I find when you're actively involved in the process, you know, not just reading, but actively engaged by writing things down, making plans, you're going to be more going to find more success in it, in therapy and counseling, when you share it with other people. Maybe even start a group, like a little therapy group where you go over the book together, come up with plans, you know, pass out phone numbers to each other, to have, like, you know, buddies to call when you're experiencing, you know, emotional distress and you're going back to, like, a negative coping mechanism. I mean, just whatever you can do to go away from the negative coping strategies to the positive, you know. And like I said at the beginning, make a game plan, set up a game plan, write it down. Writing it down is key. I've written it down and I've posted it, tacked it up in some parts of my office. I plan on tacking up more, but yeah, I think it's really good thing to do, whether you have an emotional disorder or not. I highly suggest and challenge that this week, you know, you write down which negative coping thoughts do you use? Why do you use them? How do you use them? You know, what's the distressing situation you go through that causes you to use these? And then what new coping thought could you come up with to replace them? So yeah, I challenge all of you. Let's do that. I'm going to try and think of some more. As you know, the only way we get better, you know, is if we work at it. You know. So you guys have a great week. I really enjoyed talking about this tonight. I've been excited about it all day, taking notes at work. Really enjoyed it. I hope you guys did too. Good night.